chapter 25 of the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter number 25. As we read about old man Abraham gets married again. And he thought, well, Ishmael and Isaac weren't enough. I think I'll have a few more kids. And that's what he does here in this passage of Scripture. And he, of course, this is after Sarah's death. Sarah died at 127. Rebekah and Isaac got married when Abraham was 140 years old. And here, of course, we find after this, Abraham takes another wife by the name of Keturah. Now, the word Keturah, her name means, the verb means to produce smoke. It's usually associated with incense, though. It's not like she's some kind of dragon lady or something. She's associated with incense. So she's a sweet-smelling person, I guess. But she was... Her name means to is associated with incense and means to produce smoke is her name. And Abraham takes her to wife. She was a concubine, probably one of Sarah's concubines. And it tells us there in verse 1, then again Abraham took a wife, and her name was Keturah, and she bare him. So here's his other children he has by Keturah. She bare him Zimran, and Jokshan, and Medan, and Midian, and Ishbak, and Shua. And Jokshan begat Sheba and Dedan, and the sons of Dedan were Ashurim, and Letushim, and Lumim. Whew. And the sons of Midian, Ephah, and Epher, and Hanok, and Abadi, and Eldah, all these were the children of Keturah. Now, Keturah, though we have little information about her other really than what we have listed here, she is a very significant person in this saga of Abraham's life. Because it is in Keturah that God fulfills the promise to Abraham of making him father of many nations. His very name now, Abraham, means father of nations. And here it is through Keturah that this is accomplished, because she gives him all of these sons here and grandsons that come by her, and these are all nations that are established. Some of them we recognize in the Scriptures, and some of them are traced back even to this day that people can find that they belong to this particular family. These are Arab nations, is where the majority of these are. They settled east of Isaac there. And so we see these guys as they are in the land there. Of course, Midian is one that immediately sticks out to us. This is where Jethro would be. He would be a priest there in Midian of the Lord. And that's where, of course, Moses would come and find his wife. And, of course, Jethro, his father-in-law, there in the country of Midian, those all were Abraham's family that came through Abraham and Keturah. And so we see this, how these folks play later on, especially when you get into Moses' day, Moses being the one writing this. And, of course, Moses is bringing these details to our attention because, again, he's declaring to the children of Israel these things so that when they are coming into the land, these are things they recognize. These are things they know. And so when they come into these folks that have been in Egypt their whole life, they've been down in Egypt for four generations, they're coming out of Egypt and they come into these strange lands to them, though they were not strange to their forefathers, but they're strange to them. They come into these lands and suddenly they say, oh, Midian, yeah, we know, we have heard this. This is Keturah's son. This is Abraham's family. And they have these reckonings with them as they're able to apply this to where they are going and coming into the land, knowing who these folks are. But here again is the fulfillment of God's promise that he would make him father of many nations, and the Lord does this for Abraham here through this woman, Keturah. And so she is very important as far as God's promise is concerned for Abraham and the fulfillment of that promise. Now, verse 5, it says, Abraham gave all that he had unto Isaac. Isaac was his heir. And so all that Abraham had belonged to Isaac. Isaac would receive the inheritance. But unto the sons of the concubines, which Abraham had, which would be all of Keturah's children and Ishmael, by the way, he's one of them also, he gave unto them gifts and sent them away from Isaac his son. And I about guarantee it probably wouldn't just pocket watch. I would say Abraham gave them big gifts. I would say that Abraham's gifts to them probably set them up for life, as far as what their father gave them. They're not skipped out on here, I believe, in this. The inheritance belongs to Isaac. That's who it goes through. The name goes through Isaac, but these other sons of his all received these gifts from Abram, and he sent them away from Isaac, his son, while he yet lived, eastward into the east country. And indeed, they moved east into what was Arabia at that time, and that is where these sons of Abraham would settle. And let me go back here just about these gifts. This, in chapter 21, when Isaac goes out, in verse number 14, it tells us there that he gave to Isaac, or that he sent Isaac out, or I'm sorry, Ishmael out. He sent Ishmael out, and I don't know, that may be the reason he sends these other sons out as well. But we don't have a specific instruction here by God to Abraham to send out the sons of Keturah. But for whatever reason, he sends them out also, and it may be because that's what he was instructed to do with Ishmael. In chapter 21, verse 14, it says, Abraham rose up early in the morning, took bread and bottle of water, gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder and the child, and sent her away, and she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. He was told then to send them off, let them go, it's okay. God was going to take care of them, but to send them on their way apart from the family there. And it may be the reason he sends these others out also. I don't know. We're not given any understanding of that in regards to their place. But nevertheless, he sends them out to the east country, and Isaac remains there in Canaan. And the Bible tells us here in verse 7, these are the days of the years of Abraham's life which he lived, and 175 years. 175 years Abraham would live. 175 years, and he gave up the ghost and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people. He was gathered to his people. So this tells us here, and we'll see that phrase again, that this was an understanding they had, even then, of being gathered together with God's people. Abraham, this place of paradise, is what the scripture calls it, where Abraham was, where he would go to at death. It would later be called Abraham's bosom, as the Lord would call it that. But also, he tells us as well that that was itself paradise, a holding place, not a place of protection, a place of joy, a place of blessing, a place of paradise that they are residing in until the death of Christ Jesus, at which, when he makes the payment for their sins, they are then brought into the presence of God. That's what the book of Ephesians tells us. That's what Luke chapter 16 tells us. The Lord gives us that understanding, that these folks that died in this day did not immediately go into the place of God. They did not immediately go into heaven, but they were in a place of paradise until the sacrifice is made. Ephesians tells us that Jesus would go and lead captivity captive, bring them forth out of this place. Abraham's bosom is what the Lord called it, and he would bring them out of that place and bring them into the presence of God. And so this is now where Abraham goes is with his people in paradise, where they are located at this point, and he enters in there with them at the ripe old age of 175 years old, full of years, an old man of an old age, a good old age, enters in and gathered to his people. And verse 9 it says, and his sons Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, which is before Mamre, the field which Abraham purchased of the sons of Heth. There was Abraham buried, and Sarah his wife. And it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt by the well Lahairoi. Now, though Ishmael had parted years ago, sent out by Abraham, as we saw there in chapter 21, he was 14 when he was sent out there in chapter 21. We find him here at Abraham's death. He's 89 here. So there's several years in just a short span of time that we don't have any record of Ishmael's life, but he's here at the burial of Abraham with Isaac, his little brother, who's 75 here. And they are burying Abraham here at the cave of Machpelah. And so though he was separated, he apparently was not estranged. And I don't know exactly what that, how that worked out or what that looked like. We're not given information about that, but apparently there was contact, in other words, between Ishmael and Abraham, Ishmael and his family there, though he was separated from them in another part of the land. There was obviously some kind of contact for him to come back at the time of Abraham's burial and be there for that and help Isaac with the burial. And they, of course, buried Abraham in Machpelah with Sarah. And there's no record here of Ishmael's bad feelings or anything toward Isaac. Isaac is the one who got all the blessing. Isaac is the one who got all the inheritance. Isaac got the name. Isaac, it would be through Isaac that his seed would be called, not Ishmael. But there doesn't seem to be, as far as we're told here, as far as the information is given, doesn't seem to be any animosity now. There was when Ishmael left. When he was 14, he was mocking, and in fact the New Testament tells us he was persecuting, is what the scriptures say, that he was persecuting Isaac. But here at this point, it doesn't seem like there's any animosity there of him not being that heir. And so he is here gathered with Isaac to help bury Abraham. And of course, it tells us here the Lord blesses Isaac. And Isaac dwells by the well there that Hagar named, the well that the God who sees, or the one who sees, is what Lahairoi means there. And so, verse 12, it takes up with the descendants of Ishmael. And it says, now these are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's handmaid, bare unto Abraham. And these are the names of the sons of Ishmael, by their names, according to their generations, the firstborn of Ishmael, Nebajoth, and Kedar, and Adbeel, and Mibsam, and Mishmah, and Dumah, and Mesah, Hadar, and Tema, Jetur, Naphish, and Kedemah. These are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their towns and by their castles, 12 princes according to their nations. Now, this also was a promise of God fulfilled for Ishmael here. Go back to chapter 17 and verse number 20. Here God gave this promise concerning Ishmael. Genesis chapter 17, verse number 20. Here the Lord fulfills this promise. And as for Ishmael, I have heard thee, speaking of Hagar's prayer here. As for Ishmael, I have heard thee. Behold, I have blessed him and will make him fruitful and will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he beget, and I will make him a great nation. 12 princes, he says, 12 sons, make him a great nation. That's exactly what he gives him here. 12 sons, all of them here named for us. And these are the sons of Ishmael, verse 16 says, and these are their names by their towns and by their castles, 12 princes according to their nations. According to their nations. These are the years of the life of Ishmael. 137. And he gave up the ghost and died and was gathered unto his people. So the way this is worded here, I would assume Ishmael was also in Abraham's bosom with Abraham his father. That he also was their believer. Now his children, later on anyway, would not be. The tribes that came from him, the nations, many of them are still there today, and they are make up the Muslim nations, or parts of the Muslim nations, as do the sons of Keturah. They make up those Muslim nations as well today. But at least for Ishmael, it seems that God gives us record here that Ishmael was with Abraham. That he would be in Abraham's bosom in paradise with his father, being a believer also of the promises of God. So I would assume that's the case as is given to us here concerning Ishmael, that him being gathered unto his people would be that same testimony that was given of Abraham. That both of these were believers, both of them brought into paradise. It says verse 18 there, and they dwelt from Havilah unto Shur, that is before Egypt, as thou goest toward Assyria, and he died in the presence of all his brethren. These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel the Syrian of Padan-Aram, a sister to Laban the Syrian. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. Now this is an interesting point to give. That's where Brother Jonathan and I were talking about a little bit last week. This point that's given to us here, understand the promise was given to Isaac, just as it was given to Abraham, that through Isaac shall thy seed be called. So it would be through Isaac that this promise to Abraham, the Abrahamic covenant, would be fulfilled. It would be through Isaac. We saw on Wednesday night Rebekah being chosen as Isaac's wife. And this was the one, obviously, that God had chosen for him. Because Isaac didn't have nothing to do with it. And Eleazar goes and gets her from the land of their brethren. And when he goes, Eleazar really didn't have anything to do with it. He said, Lord, you just send her to me and I'll know she's the one. But I ask her this question and she gives me this answer, I'll know that's the one you gave. And so, obviously, Rebekah is the one that's chosen for Isaac as wife. Isaac was the one that the covenant was promised to. Rebekah is the wife that was given him. So obviously, because of the promise of God, Isaac was going to have children, and apparently, since God gave him Rebekah, it would be through Rebekah. But Rebekah's barren. Rebekah's barren. Much like Sarah was barren. You see. And Isaac had learned enough, it seems, from his father And he didn't question God in this. He simply prayed, Lord, you're going to have to give us children. You're going to have to open her womb in order for us to have children. And so he entreats the Lord for Rebecca. He prays, Lord, give us children. That's the promise. Give us these children. Open her womb that we might have seed, that this promise might be fulfilled that you have given. And the Bible words it like this, the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. So the Lord, as Jonathan made the point last Sunday, he said it's was promised. We know it's what was going to take place. We know that was the reality of it. It's what was told even to Abraham. And all of these things have worked out. All of this has worked and brought to pass here that Isaac is given this wife by God. And the promise is he's going to have children. And he entreats God, he prays God. And the reason God gives for giving them children is because Isaac prayed. Because of Isaac prayed. Now, God's promise will be fulfilled. It will always be fulfilled. His will always be accomplished. But it is an absolute wonder. It is an absolute wonder to see where God brings us in to his will and accomplishes his will through us, that we might be able to take part in it with him, that our faith might be increased, that we might grow in him, knowing and seeing this is the Lord's will, and this is how he's worked it out, to allow us to be a part of it, to see how it affects others and how he's allowed us to be a part of the accomplishment of his will. But the Lord uses means, and even in those means, his work will be done. He's not going to mess anything up. We'll mess it up. We'll make all sorts of mistakes. We'll do the wrong thing. We'll follow the wrong. We'll go the wrong. But when it comes to fulfilling the will of the Lord, it will be done. He will accomplish it. And it is wondrous that he gives us opportunity, that we are able to take part in that with him as he is fulfilling even his will for us, that we are able to take part in that with him, realizing that it's not anything we've done. It's not anything that we've accomplished. It's not anything that we've been able ourselves to work, but it is what God has put in us to do. It's what he has worked through us. It is what he's accomplished in us that he brings these things to pass. But he tells us here it is because Isaac prayed that her womb was opened and that she was given these sons. Right on time. Just when God planned it to be. He prayed. God answered his prayer and gave him children, as was already promised to his father and to him, for that matter, that would take place. So it's remarkable that God works his will in such a way that it's always done. It's always done perfectly. And yet he uses us, imperfect beings as we are, sinful as we are, he uses us by his grace to accomplish his perfect will. Wondrous. It's absolutely wondrous that we are able to take part, that we are able to be in that as the Lord works such things for us. And we see this example here. It says in verse number 22, the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of the Lord. What's going on? No doubt she's feeling bad. Perhaps she thought she was losing the pregnancy because of all these issues that were going on. What's happening to me? If this is your will that I have children, if you've heard our prayer, if you've answered that, and you get what's happening, why am I in this state here? The Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, And the one shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. The elder shall serve the younger. This would be repeated in the book of Romans, chapter number 9, as God uses it here as an example for us of how His election, how His grace works. In Romans chapter 9, verse number 10, He repeats this very words here. He says, not only this, but when Rebekah also conceived by one, even by our father Isaac, for the children being not yet born, neither having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him that calleth, it was said unto her, the elder shall serve the younger. And Paul goes even farther here in verse 13, as it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. And that being from the book of Malachi. This was already determined, Paul says, before they were ever born, before they had done any good or evil. Just back to what we were talking about this morning, in the foreknowledge of God, God chose Jacob to himself. And it would be through Jacob that his promise would continue. He elected Jacob to receive his grace and to have this, whereas Esau, he would leave Esau to himself. Esau was declared here in the New Testament, he's declared as a profane man. He would disrespect his position in the family. He would disrespect the birthright that he had. We find that even in this passage here in chapter 25. He's a profane man, is what the scriptures call him. He's just profane in his character. He's profane in the things he does. And yet, what we find when we begin to compare these two sons in their lives, especially as their lives go on, between Esau and Jacob, I think what you find is Esau was the more moral person than his brother Jacob was. He's called the profane man, but you see Jacob was worse than him. And so it had absolutely nothing to do with their good works that God would choose one over the other. It had only to do with the doctrine of election, Paul says, that he would choose one and leave the other, that he would love the one and hate the other, that it was only to show forth that God chooses whom he chooses, when he wants to choose, and for his purpose of choosing. That it would not be for anything else. And so this is already, this prophecy concerning these two is already being revealed here in this passage, as he declares to Rebecca here that there were two nations that are in her womb, two manner of people that are separated from her bowels, the one shall be stronger than the other, and the elder shall serve the younger. When her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all over like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them. So Isaac was 60 years old. They waited 20 years to have children. Waited 20 years. So when you have Isaac entreating the Lord about this, you know, after 20 years, he's probably, Lord, you made this promise, and I'm getting old. And so this reason he prays, and the Lord heard his prayer. Lord waiting, you might say, on his prayer. And yet it was exactly at the right time. Exactly at the right time. How do I know it was exactly at the right time? Because God's word is eternal. And God's word says he was 60 years old when he had Jacob and Esau. And so God already knew that in his word. God already had declared that in his word. And now we see it coming to pass. And so, These two are born, and we see even out of the womb the struggle between them. Jacob grabbing is symbolic here, just the baby here grabbing, but it's symbolic of their lives to come. Jacob grabbing hold of Esau's heel here. He's always grabbing. He's always trying to tear down. He's always trying to find a way around his brother. In fact, his name means supplanter. In other words, he's always conniving. He's always looking for a way that he can get ahead, especially ahead of Esau. And Jacob would spend a majority of his life doing this with his brother before the Lord would come to him and teach him something. So we find Jacob is, if you stood these two up before you, Esau and Jacob, we would probably pick Esau every time. We'd probably say, yeah, I like Esau. Esau's my kind of fella. I like his attitude. I like the way he does. I like him that he's a man to himself. We would choose probably Esau. But that's not what the Lord did. The Lord said he chose Jacob. Now, it says in verse 27, the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field. And Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents. That word plain means refined. He was cultured. He wore the finest clothes and wouldn't get his nails dirty. That kind of fella, you know. And here Esau, he's out in the field, he's hunting, he's going about doing things a man ought to be doing. And Jacob was the one in tent. You know, painting his fingernails or whatever and looking pretty. That's what he was. He was cultured. He was refined. And it says here, Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob. And Jacob sawed pottage. And Esau came from the field and he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint. Therefore, his name was called Edom, red. And so he says, I'm about to pass out. I got to have something to eat. He said, give me some of that pottage you've made there so I can satisfy my hunger. I'm about to die here. Let me have something to eat. And so Jacob sees an opportunity. This would not hold up the court of law. But it shows us the conniving of Jacob. It shows us his conniving, and it shows the profanity of Esau. It shows us their attitudes of who they were and what belonged to them and how they viewed themselves even in their own family. So on one hand, it shows the conniving of one and it shows the profanity of the other. But it goes to... As it works out further, we'll see how these events unfold in their lives. And you may already know how these events unfold in their lives, but it just shows their attitudes going forward here in regards to who they are and where they fit in the plan and purpose of God. Esau said, I'm about to die. Give me some of that pottage you've got. And Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright. You sell me your birthright. That would be the blessing of the father. That would be the inheritance that goes rightfully to the firstborn son. That inheritance would go to him. And Jacob said, well, you sell me that, but I'll give you some pottage. I'll give you some food for your birthright. And Esau said, behold, I'm at the point to die. Boy, he's a little overdramatic, ain't he? I'm about to die here, and you want to bargain with me. What profit shall this birthright do to me? And Jacob said, swear to me this day. And he sweared to him, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Again, that wouldn't hold up nowhere as far as law is concerned. And that's probably exactly what Esau was thinking to himself. I silly boy. Like I'm really going to give him my birthright. What he didn't know is it already didn't belong to him. The elder shall serve the younger. It was already declared by God. It already did not belong to him. But we see here Esau's profanity and what he considered it to be. He did not see it as anything. Now, you know Jacob had taught them. I'm sorry, Isaac had taught them. Jump ahead of myself. You know Isaac had taught them. Abraham had taught Isaac. But in Isaac shall I see be called. These are the promises God has promised us, our people. These are the promises he says will come through you. You know Abraham told us Isaac, we have that to us. So you know Isaac likewise called his son. Hey, listen, God has made some wondrous promises to us, and we see them, that how much of them he's already fulfilled in Grandpa, and how much he's already fulfilled in me, and these promises he's given us. Listen, these things are important. These are the promises he's given concerning our family, and he's promised that he's going to give these blessings to us, that all this land belongs to us. He's going to make us a great nation. These are the things God has promised. You know he's been telling his sons that. You know he's been teaching them these things, but this, we see in this here the profanity of Esau, that he simply does not care about those things. It's not even on his radar. It's not on his mind. The promises of God, I'm just hungry. You know, he's in the flesh. He's consumed with the flesh. And we see that's the example over and over again when we read in the scriptures, when someone is left to themselves, when God does not extend his grace to an individual, we see that is the course of their life. They are only concerned with fulfilling self. Only concerned with the things of the flesh. Listen to me. Listen carefully. Just like Jacob, being the chosen, having the birthright, one elected of God, we can also, even the children of God, be like him and also be consumed with the flesh. What's the difference? What's the difference between Esau and Jacob? They are two totally different persons as far as their character is concerned and how they approach life. But as far as their sinfulness is concerned, there's not much difference. If not, we see more so in Jacob than we do Isaac. I mean, than we do Esau. We see more in Jacob than we do in Esau. What's the difference? The difference is the grace of God. It's always the difference, the grace of God. It's what makes the difference in all of us and the rest of this world. It's the grace of God, because we see ourselves, we know who we are. We're sinners. We fail. We come short of the grace of God. We have the wrong mindsets. We have the wrong attitudes. Our hearts get twisted up in our own thinking. Our thinking gets twisted up in the things of this world. We find ourselves too often just like these two, fulfilling the desires of the flesh, consumed by the wants of the flesh, constantly being directed by the flesh. We find ourselves in the same kind of situation that they are in. We see that God. We know who we are. It's not in us. It's not in Clint Keith. It's not in you as individuals that makes us stand out, that makes us different than the world. It is only the grace of God. It is his grace that makes a difference. It is his grace that makes us his people. It is his grace that makes us stick out, shine for him in this world of darkness. It is his grace that makes us different. verse 34 says, then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. He saw nothing important in it. And seeing nothing important in his birthright tells us he saw nothing important in the promises of God. He saw nothing important in the promises of God. A profane man. Listen though, Jacob didn't either at this point. Jacob didn't either. He saw life pretty much the same way Esau did. It was all about himself. All about his own flesh. All about what he could get. They could not see beyond their own physical cravings in the moment. The difference, again, the difference. The difference is the grace of God. Because God will get a hold of Jacob. He leaves Esau to himself. But he'll get a hold of Jacob. And he'll correct that thinking in Jacob. Because in Jacob, he'll give him a new heart. Let's all stand and we'll be dismissed tonight.